Welcome to Today on Broadway for Wednesday, December 7th, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I'm Broadway star's James Marino.
James, it's the day of the show, y'all. It is Hairspray Live Day over on NBC. They're going to have a ridiculously expansive broadcast tonight. The broadcast proper begins at 8 p.m., but they're going to have Darren Criss doing behind-the-scenes stuff all night. Kristen Chenoweth and Sean Hayes, who are obviously in Hairspray Live, they're going to be doing like a pre-game show, I guess. We found out yesterday that the commercials during Hairspray Live are going to be vintage 60s retro. It's going to be a huge thing on NBC. They are, you know, leaving no stone unturned. They're trying to make this as the biggest and best live musical broadcast that they've had in this four-year experiment. So if you aren't planning on tuning in, either because you love Hairspray or you like to live tweet big events, figure out if it's on at 8 or 7, depending on which time zone you're in, and join everybody in the theater community watching this thing, because I think this is going to do very, very well in the ratings when we find out later this week.
Do you think they're going to ride around in golf carts?
I would imagine so. I know you're referencing what they did in Grease Live. We might not see it until the end. We might see Darren Criss talking about it in between. But in an interview that my boss, Rob Diamond, over at Broadway World did with Neil Marin and Craig Zidan, they said they've got two sound stages, three outdoor sets, because they're out at the Universal lot. I think they're at the Universal lot this year, as opposed to doing it on one sound stage in New York or in New Jersey. I can't remember which one it was that they've done the last 3 years. So I would imagine there will be some electronic golf cart transportation going on throughout Hairspray Live tonight.
Excellent. All right. So, and we want to hear from listeners what you thought about it. Please let us know, either, you know, Facebook, Twitter, email, smoke signals, however.
Carrier pigeons.
A swallow, an English swallow, or an African swallow. All right. So first up, composer Dave Malloy returns to Great Comet next year.
Yeah, James, earlier this week, we discussed the fact that Josh Groban, the star of Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812, had committed to extend his run in the show, hanging around Imperial Russia through the beginning of July, but that he would have a handful of performances that he would have to miss due to previously scheduled commitments. Well, yesterday, Time Out New York exclusively reported that the show's composer and original star, Dave Malloy, will return to the show as Groban's alternate on those 10 scheduled absences. Malloy originated the role of Pierre in the Ars Nova and off-Broadway productions of The Great Comet, but stepped aside to make way for Groban's obvious star power. In discussing the difference between Groban's and his performances with Time Out New York, Malloy said, quote, "My voice has a kind of untrained gravelly rock and roll quality, and it's been amazing to watch Josh find some of that within the role. But then he has this ridiculous angelic thing that I can't quite do. I'm kind of the broken down version." It's a good line. Malloy continued, "I would hope that people can watch the performances and find value in both. That's the cool thing about theater to me. You get to see different versions of the same show over time." And James, what I think is really unique about this, we obviously see alternates in a lot of Broadway shows, you know, with Phantom of the Opera through its entire run, obviously recently with Lin-Manuel Miranda and Javier Munoz in Hamilton, coming up with Donna Murphy being the alternate starting in June, I think, for Bette Midler and Hello Dolly. But what's so cool about this is that in this situation, not only is the star's alternate the original, you know, performer who did the show off Broadway, but it's also the guy who wrote the show. So this is a very specific, weird, interesting and exciting way to do this alternate thing. So this is a very cool thing, especially for the legions of people who love this show dating back to Ars Nova. One cool note is that while the show's original female lead, Philippa Sue, has obviously gone on to do some other noteworthy projects and did not continue with Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812, when Malloy returns to the show, most of the rest of the cast has been pretty consistent from the show beginning at Ars Nova all the way through Broadway. So he's going to have some familiar faces to play off of on stage. Malloy will make his Broadway debut in those 10 performances beginning on May 4th and running through June 27th. James, I assume you saw Malloy at least once or twice in the various other New York productions.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm totally going to go back to see Dave in this. We interviewed Dave on This Week on Broadway a number of years ago when he was working on something else. I can't recall what he was working on, but he had done a...
Prelude, maybe? Was it Prelude?
I can't really remember. In fact, it might have been a CD release and not a show. We'll link to it in the show notes, and you can go, and listeners can go back and listen to it if you're interested in that. But Dave did a small version of Miss Saigon in a studio with a remote control helicopter, and where he played the piano and played the role of Chris, and it's hysterical. It's out of control hysterical. It was on YouTube, and we talked about it in our interview with Dave a few years back. I'll dig up the show notes for that and see if that, okay. that video is still there. But it's just friggin' hysterical. And Dave Malloy is just so outrageously talented and such a nice person. You know, I can't say enough things about him.
You know, another great thing about Dave Malloy, James.
What's that?
He is from the great state of Ohio. He was born in the Cleveland suburb of Lakewood, a place that I know well. So, oh mio, oh mio, why did we ever leave Ohio?
I got that feeling from him through Skype. I did.
We have a certain je ne sais quoi to those of us born in the Ohio, the heart of it all state.
Yeah, it's just going for it on fourth down. It's always tough.
Hey, man.
Huh. All right. So next up, Grammys announced nominees in Best Musical Theater Album category.
Yeah, yesterday the Recording Academy announced the nominees for the 58th Annual Grammy Awards, which will take place on Sunday, February 12th on CBS, and will be hosted by Tony winner James Corden. While I won't bore you with the talk of the Best New Artist nominees or the super competitive Best Tropical Latin Album category... Personally, my money's on La Sonora Santanera en su 60 aniversario. That's the clear favorite in that category. The big news for us theater folks is in the Best Musical Theater Album category. And please, for all that is holy, do not let Robbie Rizal hear you call it a soundtrack.
Oh, no. Not a soundtrack.
He was on a warpath today.
Yes.
Went after Steve Martin. Just don't. Anyway. The nominees are Bright Star with Carmen Cusack as the principal soloist, The Color Purple, Cynthia Erivo and Jennifer Hudson, principal soloists, Fiddler on the Roof, Danny Burstein, principal soloist, Kinky Boots with Killian Donnelly and Matt Henry as the principal soloists, and Waitress with Jesse Mueller, principal soloists. For those of you up in the cast album scene, you will know that the Broadway recording of Kinky Boots won the Grammy a few years ago. The album nominated this year is the West End version. I have a feeling that that doesn't happen very often, especially this close, but with someone like Cyndi Lauper behind it, I have a feeling with the Grammys, which are more political than most U.S. elections, that name of Cyndi Lauper carries a little bit of cred with it. James, lots of good debate happening about these nominations over on Twitter.com, but you know, they talk about what was snubbed, She Loves Me, and what should win, The Color Purple. So listeners, obviously let us know what you think about Hairspray Live, but also let us know what you think about these Grammy nominations over at Broadway Radio. We'd love to hear about that, and I'm sure you can always loop in Diva at Diva Robbie. He loves to talk about this stuff. But speaking of albums, when the new Billboard 200 charts are released this Sunday, record industry insiders are forecasting that the Hamilton mixtape, get this, will be the number one album in America, with up to nearly 400,000 equivalent album units. Again, I love that term every time I talk about it, that were sold between when the album dropped on December 2nd through the end of the recording week of December 8th. That's pretty cool, James.
That is really cool. When does this train end for Hamilton? It's amazing. You know, well, I probably would have, the number one album in America with nearly 400,000 equivalent album units. Certainly without that boycott, it would have been 800,000 equivalent album units. So,
getting off of that, because we know our listeners love when we talk about politics, but we've talked about this a lot. I've talked about this with Jen over on Some Like It Pop. Whoever has been doing the calendar for big media events for Hamilton, whether it's been done on purpose or not, it has been as perfect can be between the off-Broadway, then the transfer, then you had the book, then you had the documentary, then you had the album, then you had the album, you know, the cast recording in there too, and then you've got the mixtape. It's like every few months there's something big to get people excited. And then they threw in the Chicago company. The tour is going to start next year. London is going to start next year. They just are doing a really good job of keeping people excited and always looking forward to something. And whether that's just the natural flow and progression of a breakthrough landmark show, or if there's something a little bit more planned or calculated, and I don't mean that in a bad way, because obviously that's a good thing. But if it's something that's been kind of meticulously prepared for, good for them, because they've ridden this train longer than most. I can't think of any shows that's had this much pop culture relevance in recent years in a long, long time. I think it's even more than the producers had in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the producers were very hot in
sure. 2000,
2001, around that time when it would open. But I've just never seen anything like this. Yeah. All right, next up. Gypsy of the Year, Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS fundraising show. It raises an impressive total.
Yeah, James, yesterday you mentioned the 28th annual Gypsy of the Year competition produced by and benefiting Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. And later in the day yesterday, we learned that following 6 weeks of fundraising, 55 Broadway, off-Broadway, and national touring companies had raised a whopping $4,492,636 for Broadway Cares. Cynthia Erivo, Jesse Mueller, both mentioned as Grammy nominees now, as well as Javier Munoz, who we mentioned earlier in terms of being an alternate, announced the grand total on Tuesday and presented the awards to the top fundraisers and best performances from the two-day event that you mentioned. Hamilton took top honors for best onstage presentation. In a song titled America, the cast mashed up the music and lyrics of Bob Marley and Lin-Manuel Miranda and the poetry of Langston Hughes into a call for peace and equality in our country. The company of The Lion King was runner-up with a moving spoken word piece, giving voice to those marginalized by the current political climate. In terms of fundraising, drumroll please.
Excellent. Foley.
Thank you. Yeah, the top Broadway musical fundraiser was Jersey Boys with $322,211. They were followed by Hamilton, The Book of Mormon, and The Lion King. In terms of Broadway plays, it was Oh Hello on Broadway with nearly $128,000, followed by The Humans. Off-Broadway play or musical, the top fundraiser was Cagney, followed closely by Avenue Q. And for national tours, the top fundraiser was the Munchkin Land Tour of Wicked, bringing in nearly $269,000. They were followed by the Jumamosi Tour of the Book of Mormon. I took 4 quarters of Swahili in college, but I don't know what that means. That's not a lie. That is completely true. And they were followed by the Fun Home Tour, as well as the Gazelle, I can do that word, Tour of the Lion King. Congrats to all of the shows, performers, and everyone who donated to this worthwhile cause as well. James, we often marvel at the wonderfully giving and philanthropic spirit of the theater community, and this is just another great representation and personification of that.
Did you hear the story about the $20,000 wager?
I did. That's actually, I've got that coming up here that I wanted to mention. It's a great story. Jim Irsay is a billionaire who owns the Indianapolis Colts. If you follow sports, as you know, like I know a lot of listeners do, he's had an interesting past. He's kind of a guy who likes to mix it up. He's had some other brushes with the law, in fact, but apparently he was at a performance of Hamilton and during the Broadway Cares curtain speech where they're asking for donations, King George III Rory O'Malley, who was doing the speech, was asking for donations, and Jim Irsay plopped down $20,000. And James, there was something to do with he had to because Rory was saying how much he wanted to beat Josh Groban.
Yeah.
Then Josh Groban said when he heard about it that he would match that $20,000 donation if Rory O'Malley agreed to bow or kneel in front of him and say that he was the king. of the fundraising, and Rory O'Malley, being the generous, wonderful soul that he is, quickly and immediately agreed to do it. So I don't know if they did that or not, but they have a little rivalry about it. But again, that's $40,000 raised for Broadway Cares right there. And so that's a great thing for them. There's a write-up from Playbill about the whole thing when they got all the details right, because I don't want to screw that up, but good for them. And that's a lot of fun. And on a side note to all of this, I mean, we talked about Josh Groban with Dave Malloy coming in and doing this. I've just been thoroughly impressed with how Josh Groban has integrated himself into the Broadway community. And we see a lot of A-listers coming in and out. I think Zachary Levi has done a great job, very similarly with his two Broadway runs. And, you know, we see a lot of A-listers coming in and out, but it really feels like Josh Groban, whether he's on Broadway often or not, it really feels like he has become an integral part of the community, and probably will be long after he leaves Great Comet, no matter how long it is before he comes back.
I tell you, yeah, I have to agree with you. The A-listers that come in and out of Broadway that really try hard. We haven't mentioned Gary Busey in Perfect Crime on the podcast, have we?
We talked about it when it was announced and...
Did we? I don't remember
talking about it. Yeah, we talked about it. I think you wanted to try to get him for an interview or something.
All right. Let's look at the most shared article ever in the history of the world today. That everybody's talking about it. I mean, Time Out New York hitting 2 out of the park in one day.
They are killing it. Yesterday, they released an article titled "The Best 50 Broadway Songs of All Time."
We should give names here. You know, Adam Feldman and David Cody.
Adam Feldman and David Cody. They had some other people mixing in some reviews as well. Rob Weinert Kent is also featured here. These people, they undertook they do a lot of lists over at Time Out New York, not just in the theater stuff, but they make a lot of lists of things. They link to a best party songs roundup, which is cool. And every year they do a best Tony performances ever that we always want to talk about. But what they did was is they looked back at the history of Broadway, and they knew that there was no way that they were going to satisfy everybody. But they looked for 50 tracks from 1927 through 2015. They tried to spread it out over as many of the decades as possible, tried to mix up some of the styles. They also wanted to include some of the obvious choices with the less obvious ones. What they did was the rules are that they only picked one song per show, and that if a song was technically debuted in a Broadway musical from like the 20s to the 40s, but then went on to become an entry in the Great American Songbook, and people don't really know that it's a Broadway song, they didn't count those. So they've got a really eclectic list. I think for the theater diehards, you'll know most of them, but there are some even there that I'm not familiar with. Like, I knew the name, but I don't really know the show. But the top 10 are Rose's Turn from Gypsy at number 1, Old Man River from Showboat at number 2, Finishing the Hat at 3, and I Am Telling You I'm Not Going, number 4. Number 5 is Some Enchanted Evening from South Pacific. The title song from Cabaret is number 6. Satisfied from Hamilton is number 7, which I think that's pretty impressive that they got that one up there that high, and I'm sure that's a point of contention for many people. But Losing My Mind from Follies is number 8. You Got Trouble from Music Man is number 9. And then Some Other Time from On Your Town is number 10, which I think is an interesting choice. That's not what I would have gone with just from On the Town. But I think this is something, like you said, that brings a lot of debate. There's some great ones as I'm scrolling through looking at Ring of Keys is deservedly on there at number 29. You've got At the Ballet at 33. Don't Cry for Me, Argentina. Hello, Dolly. And then and to make a football connection, Mr. Irrelevant, the last one on the list, is Ease On Down the Road from The Wiz. So it's a great list, James. I enjoy this, especially because Jen and I over at Some Like It Pop, we just did an episode where we counted down our top 10 show tunes. So I know how hard making this list is.
I have known Adam Feldman for, I'm going to say, about 30 years or so.
30 years. Don't want to give it a change.
We were in kindergarten together. he and I both went early to kindergarten. Anyway, so I've known Adam for a long, long time, and I'm pretty sure I have seen him sing almost every single one of those songs with a feather boa.
He's a big karaoke guy, isn't he?
He's carrying
maybe not
cabaret,
carry,
cabaret
yeah.
performance, things like that. He is just he's a hoot. He's so smart, so scary smart, and wonderful person at that. So yay, Adam. All right, so let's get out of here. Wrap it up for today.
All right, thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio, and you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt, and subscribe to Sound Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Don't forget, I will be writing the official Broadway World review for Hairspray Live. It'll come up as soon as I'm able to get it finished after the broadcast, and then, James, you're going to see Dear Evan Hansen tomorrow, so I'll be doing Today on Broadway by myself tomorrow, and I'll have a short review of Hairspray Live in that episode as well.
All right. My name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. If I'm going to go see Evan Hansen and you're going to write the review, I might be home in time to do the recording, but we'll see. If not, I will speak to the listeners on Friday.